I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
That's the spelling test for the day. This is Johnny Rabbit. We're at your service. A program I'm going to be doing in a couple of weeks, February 27th, on a Monday, has to do with writing. We're going to be talking about writing over the next hour. This is writing, playwriting, being a critic, all the basics of playwriting. We'll even have some samples of Kevin Killeen's holiday radio shows. And we'll talk about writing commercials, writing a book, getting things published, and so on. This is for Oasis. It'll be at the Center of Clayton for Oasis. And that's Monday the 27th from 10:30 to 11:30. Just contact Oasis in St. Louis, and they will give you all of the information. Speaking about writing, now here's a person who's really written a heck of a book. Charles Parsons. I should know. Everybody should know that name, shouldn't they, John Launius?
Johnny, I think so. It's so great to be with you, by the way. I started in radio in the sense of media, and you were the most famous radio person that I knew, so it is a pleasure to actually to meet you face-to-face, though we've been emailing for
a long time.
Months. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, thank you for that very nice compliment. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Well, writing. Now, you came up. First of all, let me say that according to what I see here, you are a media and technology executive.
Correct.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that I do a lot of work in commercials and brand films. So if you've seen work from Panera, we've done work for them. Goddard School commercials.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
The BJC work that's currently in St. Louis. So I've had a chance to work across government, education, technology, and all media sectors. And so I'm the president of Vidzu Media and the chief operating officer of GenieCast.
Vidzu, what does that word mean?
So V stands for velocity, vid stands for video, and zu, believe it or not, is a Japanese word that can describe telling a story through pictures. So with velocity, we tell amazing stories through pictures, and that's all a part of our company collective called the Nitrous Effect.
Another great name, the Nitrous Effect. That's something, an outer space thing from Plan 9 from outer space with Bela Lugosi. Look at, is that a camera I see over there? Documentation, huh?
Camera, we got everything.
You have your camera person here, Amy.
Indeed.
And I thank you, Amy, for joining your husband. And what about the mental health advocate?
Yeah, so I am a hypnotist, so a hypnotherapist.
Is that why I'm feeling so strange right now? I wondered what was wrong.
Well, I get to work with a lot of people, especially around peak performance. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we've learned over the past, 40 years, the power of suggestion, the power of really, positive thinking. And that's something that I'm really interested in that has been very helpful, not only in business, but also in personal life.
Great. And then the last, but I'm not sure what it means, a world fragrance expert.
Yeah, so when I was 9 years old, I started studying two things. It was martial arts and world incense slash fragrance traditions. And so we know that every culture and every religion has had incense since the beginning of recorded history. We know the archaeological evidence of incense is 35,000 years old. So I get to kind of put all this together across all my projects and all my jobs.
Wow, that is fascinating. Now, do you have incense holders, burners, or whatever they are, collection
absolutely.
Of them?
I have a lot of 17th and 16th century incense burners. Actually, I got to work with a Selkirk auction house a couple of weeks ago looking at a lot of their new lots. And so that's one of the things I enjoy doing is going to small museums and auction houses around the country who may need some, you know, extra assistance and really looking at some interesting, you know, objects that they may have available or in their collection that have been mislabeled.
So are most of these Oriental or do they come from other countries?
They come from all over. And really, that was the impetus for this book. So in 2006, when I arrived at Washington University in St. Louis after 6 years with a number of different intelligence agencies, I was a part of the original crew at the Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum that was tasked with opening that museum, which opened in October of 2006. And what was really extraordinary about that experience was that I had no idea who Charles Parsons was. And Charles Parsons, you know, lived from 1824 to 1905. He was a banker, businessman, financier, Civil War colonel, world traveler, author, art collector. But at the time, I had no idea. And so the director of the museum, her name is Sabina Ackman, and she's wonderful. She said, I want to take a look at, you know, the 19th century collection that in many ways kicked off WashU's art collection.
Wow.
And so we were able to take a look at Charles Parsons' seminal collection of paintings from people like Corot, Church, Gifford, and Innes, as well as a lot of his Japanese and Chinese incense, objects. And so one of the pieces in the collection was a Tokugawa incense burner.
A what?
A Tokugawa. So they were the ruling.
What is that?
So they were the ruling class of Japan from 1603 to about 1868. And it was so, but the bowl, well, the incense burner was labeled as a bowl. And I turned to her and I said, that's not a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, what is it? I said, that's a Tokugawa incense burner. And she said, but it says bowl. And in the 19th century, it was not uncommon for museums around the country to have things that were mislabeled, right?
Well, it happens today.
Exactly. And so she tasked me with writing an essay, and then the essay started the research into this extraordinary forgotten St. Louisan.
You're not kidding. Extraordinary and forgotten. I've talked, mentioned the name to several people who are historians. And they say, I don't know anything about Charles Parsons. Now, the book, The Life and Times of Missouri's Charles Parsons, Between Art and War. And what does it mean, between art and war?
Yeah, so for me, when I was looking at really what, you know, what Charles Parsons was committed to was really the common good and really making a difference for people through education and through art. And if it had not have been for the Civil War to really propel Charles Parsons to luminaries of the day like William T. Sherman and General Grant, who he became close with during the war and quite literally moved their armies for success, Charles would not have achieved the status that he achieved post-Civil War.
Now, they are all from St. Louis, Grant and Sherman and Parsons.
Yeah.
Did they know each other here? And were their neighbors?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. So Charles Parsons lived at 2804 Pine, which
not far from here.
Not far.
Just west of Jefferson, two blocks west of Jefferson on the south side of the street.
Exactly.
But the house is not there anymore.
No, it's actually what it is that it's the Wells Fargo a generator right now. That's the exact place where the house was. But General Sherman lived at 912 Garrison, which was only about 5 or 6 blocks away. So what's interesting about their relationship, and I write about this in the in the book, is that William T. Sherman learned to landscape paint before the beginning of the Civil War. And Robert Anderson, who was running Fort Sumter, was teaching Sherman at that time how to paint landscapes. Well, after the war, Charles Parsons was beginning to collect his landscapes and this and that. And so we can see how Sherman and Parsons became very good friends. There's numerous letters between them, but they were connecting on art. They were connecting through banking because a lot of people forget that General Sherman was a banker in San Francisco, and then also was a quartermaster, which is what Parsons was at the beginning of the Civil War.
Now, what's a picture? There's a photograph of a building. What building is that on the front of your book?
So what you're looking at there is the first art museum west of the Mississippi, and that was located at 19th and Locust.
Just up the street from us, really.
Absolutely, yep. And now, unfortunately, it's now just a warehouse. But that building was torn down, I think, around 1940. But this museum building would eventually go on to become the City Art Museum, which would then become the St. Louis Art Museum, as well as the Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum at Washington University in St. Louis.
So what was on display in the original art museum may be partially on display in Kemper or our City Art Museum?
Absolutely, yeah. So pieces like Oenone from Harriet Hosmer. So Charles Parsons supported a female sculptor in the 19th century named Harriet Hosmer, who would go on to become one of the first internationally acclaimed female sculptors.
And one of her great works at the Mercantile Library and Art Museum. This is fabulous work. Don't ever touch it. People like to touch it. And the security guard is always, don't touch that. Don't keep your hands to you. Put your hands in your pocket.
My favorite story about sculpture and especially Harriet Hosmer was that when I first arrived at the Kemper Art Museum, I didn't have museum experience before I started working at Washington University. And one day I walked into the exhibition preparator space and there were about six people taking Q-tips, putting them in their mouth, and then rubbing down one of the sculptures by Harriet Hosmer. And I was what are you doing? And they said, well, the acid in our mouth is just enough to take away the pollution without damaging the art. It was fascinating.
That is fascinating. Yeah. That's really incredible. How long did it take you to write this book? Wait a minute. Let me ask Amy. Amy, how long did it take him to write this book?
She's kind of looking at me. Mm-hmm. So I started researching it in 2007.
And where did you start? Where did the research take you? To what places?
Well, so the research took me all over the world.
Oh.
Because if it had not been for Google digitizing a lot of the collections around 2006, 7, 8, and 9, this book could have never been written because there's so much information on Parsons that just wasn't available online. And so you had to, do the regular research trail where you're calling different organizations. Mm-hmm. The Missouri Historical Society, specifically Molly Codner, has been such a huge support for this. Like, she was so kind to pull out literally 27 boxes that the Missouri Historical Society has.
Wow.
But it connected me all around the world. It took 10 years of research and then a good year and a half to actually write.
Right, almost every day, I would assume?
Almost every day. People think I joke when I say this, but I physically injured myself writing this book.
How?
And just the amount of sitting, the amount of staring. It was my first book, and I didn't know some of the hacks that you can now, do to kind of speed the process. But I learned a great deal, and it's such an interesting book connecting so much to St. Louis and the 19th century and the positive difference that, he made in St. Louis at a time that was, so vital.
John Lanius is here. He's talking about his book, The Life and Times of Missouri's Charles Parsons, a guy we're going to get to know. And we'll hear more about all of this. And then in a little while, we're going to look back at the 1904 World's Fair and what's still around. You're listening to At Your Service, Johnny Rabbit, KMOX.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Hope I'm not hypnotized. You haven't hypnotized me. Does a person know if they've been hypnotized?
Yes,
or?
Actually they do. I mean, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions around hypnosis, but what it ultimately is that are you open to suggestions that are positive? Have you be more happy, more effective? You know, I think that stage hypnosis has done a really disservice to what's possible. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're able to, you know, really take on positive thoughts every single day, you're going to be that more effective. And that's ultimately what it's about.
Yeah. Okay. Laughing Times of Missouri's Charles Parsons. Here's your gift. You and Amy for coming here today, John Launius. That's from the Missouri Botanical Garden, or as most people in St. Louis still call it, Shaw's Garden.
Love it.
So you can go there anytime, enjoy yourself. But what about Henry Shaw and this Charles Parsons character?
Well, so Charles Parsons and Henry Shaw became friends. And so Charles Parsons was one of the investors in the two Lindell Hotels.
Mm-hmm.
They both
down on Washington.
Correct. And they both, you know, burned down.
Right.
And so when you go to Tower Grove Park and you see all of the stone gates and the area of the park known as the ruins, those all came from the Lindell Hotel. And so Charles Parsons and Henry Shaw became friends through that. And Shaw basically asked Parsons, may I have the rubble from the hotels? And that's what you see now in Tower Grove Park.
Interesting. And everybody has seen that.
Yeah.
With that little lake there, it was called a sailing pond or something originally. I don't know anybody sails on it or not anymore. I have no idea. Now you got a show, a program coming up, and then the 5th of March. That's not that far off.
Yeah, not that far off. So at the Chatillon Demenil Mansion on March 5th, I'm going to be giving a talk from 1 to 3. And what's interesting about this is that yes, it's a book talk, but you're going to get information that either couldn't be put in the book or it's information that I've learned actually after writing it.
Oh.
And I'm also going to give a demonstration of pure Japanese incense that relates to Charles Parsons' art collection. And most people, when you say the word incense, they think of the 1960s or they think of bad smells. Well, this is 100% natural. It is unlike anything you have ever experienced unless you've been to Japan. And so it's an extraordinary way to move both of of these things together. And I'm so grateful to the Châtillon Demenal House Foundation for, you know, setting this up for March 5th, 1 to 3. There's a couple different ways that you can participate. For $30, you will get the book. You're going to get the experience. You're also going to be assisting the mansion. And so there's already a number of people, but we're limiting it to 75 people. So if you want to attend, and it's going to be great. So you can do this a couple ways. One, you can go to demenal.org, which is their website. You can also send me an email at charlesparsonsbook@gmail.com. I'll say that again, charlesparsonsbook@gmail.com, and we will get you connected. But Frederick Atwood III, fantastic to work with at the mansion there. So very excited about March 5th.
That's great. And it's well, the book, man, what it sells for $23.99, so yeah. You're really getting a good deal. Now, you said things that couldn't be in the book. What does that mean?
Well, when you start to write a book, the publishers will say, well, what do you think the length is going to be? Mm-hmm. And so I said between 65 and 70,000 words, and they agreed to that, and they said X number of images. And so there's a lot of images and a lot of information that, you know, I think is very, very interesting, that I think adds to the story that necessarily couldn't be in the book after editing. And so the book talks are a way to expand the conversation. There are ways to, you know, connect a lot of other information. Like, we know that Charles Parsons was deeply connected with the 1904 World's Fair. Hmm. But by the time that fair comes around, you know, he's a year away from passing. Wow. Exactly. And so his adopted nephew, Charles Parsons Pettis, is the person who is set to, inherit the collection and the fortune that he amassed. And so there's all these different connections. So, like, for example, Halsey C. Ives, who was the first museum director west of the Mississippi, he was the art director for the 1904 World's Fair, but he was also the art director for the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. And so you start to see this connection between, you know, the ways that very large events across the country were connected, and it's a different way to tell the history of not only St. Louis, the region, but also America.
But that is all of this is very interesting, and people will learn a whole lot about St. Louis in this. This is not just a book about a person. It's really about St. Louis.
It is, absolutely. And also somebody who, you know, Charles Parsons believed in art and thought that art was going to continue to expand in a way that would, keep his name in the forefront. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't. You know, he put his money in art as opposed to buildings. You know, one of his best friends was Robert S. Brooking, and we know Brookings Hall at Wash U,
sure.
But we don't know Charles Parsons Hall because there wasn't one. Mm-hmm. But there was Parsons College in Fairfield, Iowa.
Did he found that college?
Well, so he founded it with his two brothers at the request of his father. His father wanted to have a Christian college in the Midwest, but he passed away before seeing that come to fruition. Because of the Civil War and a number of other things, it took them until 1875 to start Parsons College. Now, what's interesting about this is that in 1973, there's a Maharishi that comes along who was teaching the Beatles,
yep.
And says, you know what, we're going to buy Parsons College and we're going to make it the Maharishi Maharesh University. And there's actually a documentary that'll be out later in the year that I'm a part of, Dick DeAngelis and Fairfield Productions put together about the founding of Parsons College. So very interesting.
Anything on YouTube that you can see about this?
Yeah. So I have a YouTube channel for the book. It's just Charles Parsons. And I took 1-minute excerpts of almost all the chapters of the book so you can get a glimpse into each one of the chapters. Again, because it's such a niche historical subject and Charles Parsons isn't a household name.
Right.
It gives people the a real easy way to say, oh, okay, wow. Wow, I am going to learn a lot. This mm-hmm. is going to be interesting.
What about Charles Parsons' book? Did he write any books?
He wrote one book. He wrote Notes of Travel in 1894 and 1895. It was only for private circulation, so there were only about 600 of these books produced. I have one of the original ones, which is actually dedicated to Halsey C. Ives, who I was just talking about with the 1904 World's Fair. So it's probably the best one that I could own.
How many copies of The Life and Times of Missouri stories Charles Parsons, Between Art and War, printed?
So they're printing on demand, but from what I've heard, so it's a 5-star rated book on Amazon and in other places online.
Great.
I think there's been at least 25,000.
Wow.
That have been printed.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. But you know, what I love about this interview, Johnny, is that. You know, the book launched on February 13th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, all of the shutdowns for COVID started.
Yeah.
And so this book has really found its way into people's hearts and lives in very interesting ways. And so I really appreciate the time today.
Well, we appreciate your time. And thank you. Now, what are you going to do with that video you've just done? You're not going to be selling that online,
are you? No. I'm going to put it up on the Charles Parsons YouTube page.
All right.
So that, you know, people can see our conversation.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Thank you, Amy, for escorting your associate. We appreciate that very much. Stick around. We're going to the World's Fair. In a way, we really are. That's next. Diane Rademacher. I'm Johnny Rabbit at your service at KMOX. Hey, Rabbit, at your service in KMOX. Look here. It's Diane Rademacher. You were waylaid by the dogs, the costume dogs and Gravoy, leaving the parade, huh?
That's correct. There were a lot.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. He's got to turn on your mic. I don't know what happened. Are you okay? Let's see. Over here. Say something.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There were quite a few dogs out there today on Gravoy.
Good. And they have costumes?
Oh, sure. Of course. So the people did, too.
I bet they did. Oh, my gosh. That's always such a great event. And thank goodness they had a good day for it, too.
Oh, yeah,
beautiful weather.
Wonderful.
Really, really, really nice. Well, you have two books. One we will dwell on today, but one we forgot to mention, Famous Firsts of St. Louis. That book is still in print, still available. You can still buy it. Where?
Yeah, I had it reprinted recently, and actually it's at the History Museum in the Loft Gift Shop down at Sappington House. Have a Cow Restaurant on Lafayette.
Now, wait a second. Have a Cow Restaurant. Have a Cow Cattle Company Restaurant. It's 2700 block of Lafayette, one of my favorite places.
Yes, it's a great place.
But they have a great gift shop. I don't know what you could call it. They got a lot of weird stuff in there.
Right. You can sit there and eat and shop at the same time.
And get your book.
On the wall.
Yeah, that's terrific. And the Missouri History Museum. Now, it's still shining. Now, this book came out how long ago? It was 20 years ago?
Or? 2003, right. Right before the centennial of the 1904 World's Fair.
Gosh. And it still sells.
Still Shining is still selling. I'm happy about that.
It's a very nice book. And it's, again, you can find it just going to any bookstore, and if they should have it, or you can get it at the library if you don't want to buy it, of course.
Right.
You get it online, like Amazon or...
Right. There's some resellers online that sell it.
Mm-hmm. Used or new, I guess?
Both, I believe.
Both. And it sells for $19.95. Is that still the same price, or has it gone up?
Oh, it went up a little bit since 2003.
What is it now? You know, $50?
I think $22.95.
Well, that's not so bad. And I found an article that I'd mentioned to you was in the paper that I'd been saving, and this is from Sunday, November 20th of last year. Where did the World's Fair go? I mentioned several times in the article. I can't find. Oh, here's his name, Jim Winterman. I don't know Jim. Is he from St. Louis? Do you know?
I believe so. I talked with him.
Mm-hmm. You've read a nice article in there and about things. You know, where did this stuff go? Everybody thinks, well, it was all gone. It was all torn down. It's not the case. There's a lot of stuff. Now, we're talking about 119 years ago, though, and our expert in the subject, Diane Rademacher, here at KMOX Studio B, we have nothing in here other than this book to talk about the World's Fair, and there's no artifact here. But there are, artifacts and souvenirs that are in a lot of collections.
Oh, sure. A lot of people collect World's Fair items.
Who collects them?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have a family connection to the World's Fair. I certainly do.
Is that?
Well, my dad was born in 1904.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little older when I was born. And actually, his uncle was a stockholder in the World's Fair. And so the family story was that Dad went to the World's Fair as a baby. And so I was always interested because of that. And then my sister and I, we both wrote papers in school.
Sure.
And in the early 1970s, my brother-in-law was working down at the Union Electric Ashley plant down on the riverfront and told me about an old air compressor that was taken offline, but it had been from the World's Fair.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, wow, I'd love to get a picture of that. So he got permission, and we went down there on a Saturday and took a picture of this Polaroid picture, still have it, and started a scrapbook then, collecting different articles.
Good idea.
And items from the fair that were still left. And then in 1986, The World's Fair Society, 1904 World's Fair Society, mm-hmm. was founded by a gentleman, Max Storm. And people who were interested in the fair, collectors, historians, would convene monthly. And I found out about a whole bunch more things from the fair.
Sure.
And thought, well, you know, somebody should give a program to our organization about what's left. And I thought, well, probably should be me.
It should be. And it was. And it is. Well, 1904 World's Fair Society, I mean, you're really an active organization. Mike Truax and the gang, I mean, they are...
Right.
I mean, it seems like every week I'm getting another mailer or something, usually with your picture inside doing something or other.
Yeah, it's been going strong since 1986. We have about 300 members.
So. That's a lot. That's today. I mean, we're talking about something like 119 years ago.
Right. And yesterday we had a meeting, and some people came in from Colorado. They're members, and periodically they come in and join us. And
yeah, who are these members? Can somebody join?
Anybody can join.
What do you do?
Well, you could go online to the World's Fair Society website, and I believe there's an application out there.
Which is to put in World's Fair Society?
I don't have the exact address, but...
I'm sure you could find it easily enough.
Sure.
And it is open. I mean, there are all kinds of people that are in there, and you do have a lot of activities and lunches and dinners and picnics. And
it's really a fun group, and I've made wonderful friends over the years. So
you said yesterday there was a meeting?
There was.
It
was down at the Central Library just across the street from where we are.
What room were you in?
Well, we were in the St. Louis Collections room, and then
we had a
general tour of the library.
That is great to take that tour.
Some details. Yeah, it was very interesting. Very good docent.
Now, tell us, what's the biggest thing that remains, would you say?
Well, of course, everybody knows about the art museum and the birdcage.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
There's some houses here in St. Louis that...
Well, not everybody knows about the Art Museum and the Birdcage. The Art Museum, it's not the whole Art Museum that we see today that was there. The East and West Wings were not permanent. But the center, the main building of the Art Museum, dates from the World's Fair. So, I mean, there, and this is something you can go in and you can see. And, of course, the Smithsonian flight cage at the zoo... which is still there, and all the birds seem to enjoy it there. And you can you still walk through it, you know?
I think that years ago you could. I'm not sure what it's like today. I haven't been there in a while. But, you know, it's interesting that the birdcage at the zoo during 1904, there were two sections, and they had large birds on the one side and smaller birds on the other side. And there was a covered walkway. And so people couldn't walk through, which, you know, was duplicated then in recent years. And after the fair, the city had the rights to buy the birdcage, in which they did. And the Smithsonian, however, took back all its birds. And so So St. Louis had to come up with, you know, its own bird supply. And so private citizens even donated birds, I read. So that's how.
That's interesting. Interesting
got
to see. The World's Fair Pavilion. That's not from the World's Fair, though. Most people say, that's the World's Fair. It was there. It wasn't.
It's not. No, I think our fair was one of the few to make a profit, and so they used those profits to create the World's Fair Pavilion and also the Jefferson Memorial Building.
1909 for the pavilion and the Missouri History Museum, Jefferson Memorial Building. That went up in 1913.
13, yes.
River de Pere is still there, but it's those big things underground where you don't want to go in. But it used to flood. Well, that intersection used to flood a lot. There's some great photographs of the past. Now, the observation wheel, the big Ferris wheel, that's gone.
Right, that's gone. And, you know, there's been this urban myth here in St. Louis about where the axle is. And some people have said that it was demolished and cut up and salvaged for, you know, other uses. And other people are still looking for it. And there's a professor at Washington University, and she has used ground-penetrating radar and, you know, some other scientific methods to see if that axle still exists somewhere in the park.
It doesn't.
I like the urban legend. Should find it, I hope she does.
It's really been proven that it's gone. It is gone. It is went back home to Chicago.
Well.
Not all in one part.
Yeah.
Now, what about some other buildings? The press building. What was the press building? Obviously for the media.
Right. The press building was actually the first building put up at the fair. And it had been used in previous fairs because it's where the journalists and correspondents would meet to write their stories about what, you know, they were seeing. And that was actually relocated after the fair in part. It doesn't look quite exactly like it did initially, but it's very pretty. It's in Webster Groves.
And, what street?
It is on, let's see, it is on Clark Avenue. And it's very lovely to see.
You know, what is in it? Is it a home?
Oh, it's a home, yes. Hmm. Yes, people live there now. Most of these buildings that were relocated have become homes. And a few of them have been for sale over the years. And mm-hmm. when I would find out about it, I'd go and take a look.
Of course.
Haven't been in that one, however.
Now, what about the Connecticut State Pavilion? That's not here.
That's right. No, the Connecticut State Pavilion, a beautiful pavilion. It has a lovely portico on the one side. It kind of looks like the White House, actually. Hmm. And that was moved to Lafayette, Indiana, not too far from Purdue University. And it was a home, a 10,000 square foot home. And the people who owned it knew that, you know, of its historical significance. And they collected a lot of artwork and a lot of artifacts from the 1904 fair. And they periodically had house tours. Well, now it's a museum in Lafayette, and it has the largest collection of Indiana art. And it's really quite interesting to see. It looks almost exactly like it did at the 1904 fair, except in 1904 it was white in color, and now it's a buff color.
So this was not made of staff then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what those wall panels were made of, mm-hmm. but it was able to be deconstructed and then put on flatbed rail cars and then moved out to Indiana.
Because a lot of the buildings or the structures, a lot of the statuary, over 1,000 statues, made of staff.
Staff.
Which was a temporary mixture of plaster of Paris, concrete, water, hemp. And, of course, a lot of it went over wood framing, which was not meant to last either. And so most of the fair is gone. But for all practical purposes, you know, probably 98% of it is gone somewhere, probably in landfills from years ago, or portions of it were reused for building a house or something, getting some of the framing and so on. The apotheosis of St. Louis. A lot of people say, well, that used to be right at the entrance to the World's Fair where the History Museum is located, but it wasn't.
Well,
Statue that is there wasn't.
No, it was not. It was down in one of the plazas, and it was made out of staff and by Charles Niehaus. And
then
after the fair, it was recast in bronze, and now it's located in front of the Art Museum on Art Hill.
And Niehaus didn't get the commission. It was somebody else because his price was too high.
Oh, really?
So they hired another person to do it. I don't know if it's a plaque or whether as a signing of the Louisiana Purchase Treaty or agreement. That was also temporary, but it has been recast.
Right. That was on the front of the Louisiana Purchase Monument at the World's Fair. And it was recast in bronze, and one copy is at the History Museum in the Loggia area, mm-hmm. and the other copy is at the Jefferson City State Capitol.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? the hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Hey, Rabbit, at your service in KMOX. Look here, it's Diane Rademacher. You were waylaid by the dogs, the costume dogs and Gravoy leaving the parade, huh?
That's correct. There were a lot.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. He's got to turn on your mic. I don't know what happened. Are you okay? Let's see. Over here. Say something.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There were quite a few dogs out there today on Gravoy.
Good. And they have costumes?
Oh, sure. Of course. Some the people did, too.
I bet they did. Oh, my gosh. That's always such a great event. And thank goodness they had a good day for it, too.
Oh, yeah, beautiful
weather.
Wonderful.
Really, really,
yeah.
Really nice. Well, you have two books. One we will dwell on today, but one we forgot to mention, Famous Firsts of St. Louis. That book is still in print, still available. You can still buy it. Where?
Yeah, I had it reprinted recently, and actually it's at the History Museum in the Loft Gift Shop down at Sappington House. Have a Cow Restaurant on Lafayette.
Now, wait a second. Have a Cow Restaurant. Have a Cow Cattle Company Restaurant. It's 2700 block of Lafayette, one of my favorite places.
Yes, it's a great place.
And they have a great gift shop. I don't know what you could call it. They got a lot of weird stuff in there.
Right. You can sit there and eat and shop at the same time.
And get your book.
On the wall.
Yeah, that's terrific. And the Missouri History Museum. Now, it's still shining. Now, this book came out how long ago? It was 20 years ago?
2003, right.
It was.
Right before the centennial of the 1904 World's Fair.
Gosh, and it still sells.
Still shining is still selling. I'm happy about that.
It's a very nice book. And it's, again, you can find it just going to any bookstore, and if they should have it, or you can get it at the library if you don't want to buy it, of course.
Right.
And you get it online, like Amazon or...
Right. There's some resellers online that sell it.
Mm-hmm. Used or new, I guess?
Both, I believe.
Both. And it sells for $19.95. Is that still the same price, or has it gone up?
Oh, it went up a little bit since 2003.
What is it now? You know, $50?
I think $22.95.
Well, that's not so bad. And I found an article that I'd mentioned to you was in the paper that I'd been saving, and this is from Sunday, November 20th of last year. Where did the World's Fair go? I mentioned several times in the article. I can't remember. Oh, here's his name, Jim Winterman. I don't know Jim. Is he from St. Louis? Do you know?
I believe so. I talked with him.
Mm-hmm. You read a nice article in there about things. You know, where did this stuff go? Everybody thinks, well, it was all gone. It was all torn down. It's not the case. There's a lot of stuff. Now, we're talking about 119 years ago, though. And our expert on the subject, Diane Rademacher, here at KMOX Studio B, we have nothing in here other than this book to talk about the World's Fair. And there's no artifact here. But there are, of course, artifacts and souvenirs that are in a lot of collections.
Oh, sure. A lot of people collect World's Fair items.
Who collects them?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have a family connection to the World's Fair. I certainly do.
How was that?
Well, my dad was born in 1904. Mm-hmm. He was a little older when I was born. And actually, his uncle was a stockholder in the World's Fair. And so the family story was that Dad went to the World's Fair as a baby. And so I was always interested because of that. And then my sister and I, we both wrote papers in school.
Sure.
And in the early 1970s, my brother-in-law was working down at the Union Electric Ashley plant down on the riverfront and told me about an old air compressor that was taken offline, but it had been from the World's Fair.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, wow, I'd love to get a picture of that. So he got permission, and we went down there on a Saturday and took a picture of this Polaroid picture, still have it, and started a scrapbook then, collecting different articles.
Good idea.
And items from the fair that were still left. And then in 1986, the World's Fair Society, 1904 World's Fair Society, mm-hmm. was founded by a gentleman, Max Storm. And people who were interested in the fair, collectors, historians, would convene monthly. And I found out about a whole bunch more things from the fair.
Sure.
And thought, well, you know, somebody should give a program to our organization about what's left. And I thought, well, probably should be me.
It should be. And it was. And it is. Well, 1904 World's Fair Society, I mean, you're really an active organization. Mike Truax and the gang, I mean, they are...
Right.
I mean, it seems like every week I'm getting another mailer or something, usually with your picture inside doing something or other.
Yeah, it's been going strong since 1986. We have about 300 members.
So. That's a lot. That's today. I mean, we're talking about something that was 119 years ago.
Right. And yesterday we had a meeting, and some people came in from Colorado. They're members, and periodically they come in and join us. And
yeah, who are these members? Can somebody join?
Anybody can
join. What do you do?
Well, you could go online to the World Sphere Society website, and I believe there's an application out there.
Which is to put in World Sphere Society?
I don't have the exact address, but...
I'm sure you could find it easily enough.
Sure.
And it is open. I mean, there are all kinds of people that are in there,
and you do have
a lot of activities and lunches and dinners and picnics. And
it's really a fun group, and I've made wonderful friends over the years. So
you said yesterday there was a meeting?
There was.
It
was down at the Central Library just across the street from where we are.
What room were you in?
Well, we were in the St. Louis Collections room,
and then we had a
general tour of the library.
That is great to take that
some
tour.
Some details. Yeah, it was very interesting. Very good docent.
Now, tell us, what's the biggest thing that remains, would you say?
Well, of course, everybody knows about the art museum and the birdcage.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
There's some houses here in St. Louis that...
Well, not everybody knows about the art museum and the birdcage. The art museum, it's not the whole art museum that we see today that was there. The east and west wings were not permanent. But the center, the main building of the art museum, dates from the World's Fair. So, right. I mean, there, and this is something you can go in and you can see. And, of course, the Smithsonian flight cage at the zoo... Which is still there, and all the birds seem to enjoy it there. And you can you still walk through it, you know?
I think that years ago you could. I'm not sure what it's like today. I haven't been there in a while. But, you know, it's interesting that the birdcage at the zoo during 1904, there were two sections, and they had large birds on the one side and smaller birds on the other side. And there was a covered walkway. And so people couldn't walk through, which, you know, was duplicated then in recent years. And after the fair, the city had the rights to buy the birdcage, and which they did. And the Smithsonian, however, took back all its birds. And so So St. Louis had to come up with, you know, its own bird supply. And so private citizens even donated birds, I read. So that's how.
That's interesting.
Interesting
to see. The World's Fair Pavilion. That's not from the World's Fair, though. Most people say, oh, that's the World's Fair. It was there. It wasn't.
It's not. No, I think our fair was one of the few to make a profit, and so they used those profits to create the World's Fair Pavilion and also the Jefferson Memorial Building.
1909 for the pavilion and the Missouri History Museum, Jefferson Memorial Building. That went up in 1913.
13, yes.
River de Pere is still there, but it's those big things underground where you don't want to go in. But it used to flood. Well, that intersection used to flood a lot. There's some great photographs of the past. Now, the observation wheel, the big Ferris wheel, that's gone.
Right, that's gone. And, you know, there's been this urban myth here in St. Louis about where the axle is. And some people have said that it was demolished and cut up and salvaged for, you know, other uses. And other people are still looking for it. And there's a professor at Washington University, and she has used ground-penetrating radar and, you know, some other scientific methods to see if that axle still exists somewhere in the park.
It doesn't.
I like the urban legend. If anybody should find it, I hope she does.
it's really been proven that it's gone. It is gone. It is went back home to Chicago.
Well.
Not all in one part.
Yeah.
Now, what about some other buildings? The press building. What was the press building? Obviously for the media.
Right. The press building was actually the first building put up at the fair. And it had been used in previous fairs because it's where the journalists and correspondents would meet to write their stories about what, you know, they were seeing. And that was actually relocated after the fair in part. It doesn't look quite exactly like it did initially, but it's very pretty. It's in Webster Groves. And,
what street?
It is on, let's see, it is on Clark Avenue. And it's very lovely to see.
You know, what is in it? Is it a home?
Oh, it's a home, yes. Hmm. Yes, people live there now. Most of these buildings that were relocated have become homes. And a few of them have been for sale over the years. And when I would find out about it, I'd go and take a look.
Of course.
Haven't been in that one, however.
Now, what about the Connecticut State Pavilion? That's not here.
That's right. No, the Connecticut State Pavilion, a beautiful pavilion. It has a lovely portico on the one side. It kind of looks like the White House, actually. Hmm. And that was moved to Lafayette, Indiana, not too far from Purdue University. And it was a home, a 10,000 square foot home. And the people who owned it knew that, you know, of its historical significance. And they collected a lot of artwork and a lot of artifacts from the 1904 fair. And they periodically had house tours. Well, now it's a museum in Lafayette, and it has the largest collection of Indiana art. And it's really quite interesting to see. It looks almost exactly like it did at the 1904 fair, except in 1904 it was white in color, and now it's a buff color.
So this was not made of staff then?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what those wall panels were made of, but it was able to be deconstructed and then put on flatbed rail cars and then moved out to Indiana.
Because a lot of the buildings or the structures, a lot of the statuary, over 1,000 statues, made of staff.
Staff.
Which was a temporary mixture of plaster of Paris, concrete, water, hemp. And, of course, a lot of it went over wood framing, which was not meant to last either. And so most of the fair is gone. But there are all practical purposes. You know, probably 98% of it is gone somewhere. It's probably in landfills from years ago, or portions of it were reused for building a house or something, getting some of the framing and so on. The apotheosis of St. Louis. A lot of people say, well, that used to be right at the entrance to the World's Fair where the History Museum is located, but it wasn't.
Well,
the statue that wasn't.
No, it was not. It was down in one of the plazas, and it was made out of staff and by Charles Niehaus. And
then
after the fair, it was recast in bronze, and now it's located in front of the Art Museum on Art Hill.
And Niehaus didn't get the commission. It was somebody else because his price was too high.
Oh, really?
So they hired another person to do it. I don't know if it's a plaque or what, as a signing of the Louisiana Purchase Treaty or agreement. That was also temporary, but it has been recast.
Right. That was on the front of the Louisiana Purchase Monument at the World's Fair. And it was recast in bronze, and one copy is at the History Museum in the Loggia area, and the other copy is at the Jefferson City State Capitol. It's in a little plaza above the Missouri River.
We're going to come back with you, Diane Rademacher, talk more about what was at the 1904 World's Fair and some of what is today that you can see, not necessarily in St. Louis, but all around our country. So the fair lives on right now, on At Your Service with yours truly, Johnny Rabbit. You're listening to KMOX. That's us, and we are here at your service. Well, let's see. First things first. Now, wait a minute. Let's see. Here's your two tickets, Diane Rademacher, our guest, courtesy of the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Isn't that a great place
it would be to go.
And they actually have two lanterns that were in the Japanese Garden in 1904.
No, I didn't know that. Where are they?
Well, they're in the Japanese Garden today at the Botanical Garden.
That is something to see. And it's a great festival that comes up there every year. And then you're going to be making a special appearance at our program on writing. That's going to be on the 27th, Monday the 27th. This is for Oasis. It'll be at the Center of Clayton. Oasis, Center of Clayton, Monday, February 27th at 10:30. We're going to talk about writing essays and stories and commercials and plays and even doing a couple of pages of a Kevin Killeen holiday radio show from KMOX, I think 22 years ago or so. Well, we started off our conversation talking about dogs tying up traffic in Gravoy from the Purina Pet Parade in their costumes, but there was a famous dog at the World's Fair.
Yes, in the late 19th century, there was the dog Oni. He was the mascot of the railway mail service. And to me, he was sort of like the Lassie or Rin Tin Tin of my day. And he was a little orphan dog that wandered into the Albany, New York post office and kind of found a little bed on the top of some mail sacks. So the mail clerks, they adopted him, and they started taking him on the mail trains, and he traveled all over the U.S., and to kind of document where he had been, they would put little mail bag tags on his collar, little betel tags. And so he accumulated probably hundreds of those. And when there were too many for the collar, they gave him a little jacket. And so they had these little tags all over the jacket. And he was shown to dog shows and conventions. And he traveled around the world. I mean, this was quite the dog. Well, in 1897, he was a little bit older. And he kind of went out on his last trip, and he bit a postal worker.
Oh, no.
And as a result, he was shot.
Oh, no. But
I know.
Dramatic.
A very sad
Oh,
sad
what a sad
ending.
End to Oney.
But he was preserved by a taxidermist and then exhibited. And he was at our 1904 World's Fair in a little case and with his little jacket and metal bagging tags.
And unable to bite anybody else.
Exactly.
Where's Oney today?
Well, today he is at the National Postal Museum in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on display in a case, and they have all sorts of souvenirs related to Oney. And that's the story.
You mentioned some lanterns at Shaw's Garden, at Missouri Botanical Garden. There are some other lights around a couple for sure.
Right. Oh, yes. I call them the Bud Lights. Great Britain had a beautiful replica of the orangery from Kensington Palace that was its display home at the 1904 World's Fair. And its banquet hall had a lovely chandelier that, well, actually two of them, that now grace O'Connell's Pub on South Kings Highway. And then the Belgium Pavilion at the fair, it had a hop vine chandelier. And that is now in the atrium at the brew house at Anheuser-Busch.
Wow, that's some interesting things to see. And it's still in use today.
Yes, and then the French Pavilion, he had two lovely large chandeliers, and Anheuser-Busch acquired both of those, and one is in the Clydesdale stable at the Pestalozzi location,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is in the lobby of the Adolphus Hotel down in Dallas,
Texas. Oh, my
gosh. Yes, and they're very big and very beautiful, and they're emblazoned with eagles.
That is wonderful.
Not sure if the eagles were original or added on later.
Now, there's some other thing. The Oklahoma Territory Pavilion. This is before the Oklahoma became a state, but they had a pavilion at the World's Fair.
Right, yeah. Oklahoma wasn't a state yet, not till 1906, but they had a territory building, a very lovely building with arches and in the Moorish design. Well, after the fair, it was moved to El Reno, Oklahoma, and it became the headquarters for the organizations down there, the Elks Club.
Still there, though.
And it's still there. Yeah, it's been modified somewhat, but still reflects some of the original design.
What about Vulcan, the statue, the big statue?
Yeah, 56 feet tall. It was the largest cast iron statue in the world. It was exhibited by the city of Birmingham, Alabama, to promote their steel making from the iron ore that's in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And after the fair, it was, after our fair, it was relocated at the state fairgrounds in Alabama. And it was kind of used for different purposes to advertise items like soft drinks and ice cream cones and pickles.
Oh, funny.
And then they thought it needed a more dignified location. So now it's at the top of Red Mountain down in Birmingham, and it stands atop 120-foot open-air tower, and you can actually go up in the tower and see Vulcan.
Oh, my gosh.
It's quite impressive.
It would be impressive. Well, I think we have time for one more thing. Let's see. What could that? Well, how about the organ, the pipe organ Festival Hall?
Right. St. Louis had, probably the world's largest pipe organ that was inside of Festival Hall, which was the focal point of the fair in front of the Art Museum on
Hall. The Cascades were right there.
Right. And after the fair, it was relocated to Philadelphia. It was called the Wanamaker organ because it was in Wanamaker's department store, which has since become Macy's.
Yeah.
And now,
still there.
Still there. It has a almost 29,000 pipes now, and they give concerts twice a day, and was in Philadelphia not too long ago, and actually
did you hear it?
A little concert, yeah.
Well, be darned, that would be exciting.
From our fair, and it's very beautiful, I mean, how they have it placed in the store. It's very
well, you've
lovely.
Given us a lot of good information, Diane Rademacher. Thank you so much for taking your time away from your Super Bowl activities.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Your book, Still Shining, by Diane Rademacher, and also Famous Firsts of St. Louis. We need to talk about that another time.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Johnny Rabbit, KMOX. Listening to KMOX. That's us, and we are here at your service. Well, let's see. First things first. Now, wait a minute. Let's see. What's for? Oh, here. Here's your two tickets, Diane Rademacher, our guest, courtesy of the Missouri Botanical Garden.
Isn't that a great place?
What a place it would be to go.
And they actually have two lanterns that were in the Japanese garden in 1904.
No, I didn't know that. Where are they?
Well, they're in the Japanese garden today at the Botanical Garden.
That is something to see. And it's a great festival that comes up there every year. And then you're going to be making a special appearance at our program on writing. That's going to be on the 27th, Monday the 27th. This is for Oasis. It'll be at the Center of Clayton, Oasis Center of Clayton, Monday, February 27th at 10:30. We're going to talk about writing essays and stories and commercials and plays and even doing a couple of pages of a Kevin Killeen holiday radio show from KMOX, I think 22 years ago or so. Well, we were started off our conversation talking about dogs tying up traffic in Gravoy from the Purina Pet Parade in their costumes, but there was a famous dog at the World's Fair.
Yes, in the late 19th century, there was the dog Oni. He was the mascot of the railway mail service. And to me, he was sort of like the Lassie or Rin Tin Tin of my day. And he was a little orphan dog that wandered into the Albany, New York post office and kind of found a little bed on the top of some mail sacks. So the mail clerks, they adopted him, and they started taking him on the mail trains, and he traveled all over the U.S., and to kind of document where he had been, they would put little mail bag tags on his collar, little betel tags. And so he accumulated probably hundreds of those. And when there were too many for the collar, they gave him a little jacket. And so they had these little tags all over the jacket. And he was shown to dog shows and conventions. And he traveled around the world. I mean, this was quite the dog. Well, in 1897, he was a little bit older. And he kind of went out on his last trip, and he bit a postal worker.
Oh, no.
And as a result, he was shot.
Oh, no. But,
I know.
Dramatic.
A very sad
ending. Oh, what a sad end to Oni.
But he was preserved by a taxidermist and then exhibited, and he was at our 1904 World's Fair in a little case and with his little jacket and metal bagging tags.
And unable to bite anybody else.
Exactly.
Where's Oni today?
Well, today he is at the National Postal Museum in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on display in a case, and they have all sorts of souvenirs related to Oni. And that's the story.
You mentioned some lanterns at Shaw's Garden, at Missouri Botanical Garden. There are some other lights around a couple for sure.
Right. Oh, yes. I call them the Bud Lights. Great Britain had a beautiful replica of the orangery from Kensington Palace that was its display home at the 1904 World's Fair. And its banquet hall had a lovely chandelier that, well, actually two of them, that now grace O'Connell's Pub on South Kings Highway. And then the Belgium Pavilion at the fair, it had a hop vine chandelier. And that is now in the atrium at the brew house at Anheuser-Busch.
Wow, that's an interesting thing to see. And it's still in use today.
Yes, and then the French Pavilion, he had two lovely large chandeliers, and Anheuser-Busch acquired both of those, and one is in the Clydesdale Stable at the Pestalozzi location, and the other one is in the lobby of the Adolphus Hotel down in Dallas,
Texas. Oh, my
gosh. Yes, and they're very big and very beautiful, and they're emblazoned with eagles.
That is wonderful.
Not sure if the eagles were original or added on later.
Now, there's some other thing. The Oklahoma Territory Pavilion, this is before the Oklahoma became a state, but they had a pavilion at the World's Fair.
Right, yeah. Oklahoma wasn't a state yet, not till 1906, but they had a territory building, a very lovely building with arches and in the Moorish design. Well, after the fair, it was moved to El Reno, Oklahoma, and it became the headquarters for the organizations down there, the Elks Club.
Still there, though.
And it's still there. Yeah, it's been modified somewhat, but still reflects some of the original design.
What about Vulcan, the statue, the big statue?
Yeah, 56 feet tall. It was the largest cast iron statue in the world. It was exhibited by the city of Birmingham, Alabama, to promote their steel making from the iron ore that's in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And after the fair, it was, after our fair, it was relocated at the state fairgrounds in Alabama. And it was kind of used for different purposes to advertise items like soft drinks and ice cream cones and pickles.
Oh, funny.
And then they thought it needed a more dignified location. So now it's at the top of Red Mountain down in Birmingham, and it stands atop 120-foot open-air tower, and you can actually go up in the tower and see Vulcan.
Oh, my gosh.
It's quite impressive.
It would be impressive. Well, I think we have time for one more thing. Let's see. What could that? Well, Some of the organ, the pipe organ that was in Festival Hall.
Right. St. Louis had, you know, probably the world's largest pipe organ that was inside of Festival Hall, which was the focal point of the fair in front of the Art Museum on
Hall. The Cascades were right there.
Right. And after the fair, it was relocated to Philadelphia. It was called the Wanamaker organ because it was in Wanamaker's department store, which has since become Macy's.
Yeah. And still now, there.
Still there. It has a... almost 29,000 pipes now, and they give concerts twice a day. And was in Philadelphia not too long ago, and actually
did you hear it?
A little concert, yeah.
Well, be darned, that would be exciting
from our fair, and it's very beautiful. I mean, how they have it placed in the store. It's very
well. You've
lovely.
Given us a lot of good information, Diane Rademacher. Thank you so much for taking your time away from your Super Bowl activities.
Thank you. My
your
pleasure.
Book, Still Shining. By Diane Rademacher, and also Famous Firsts of St. Louis. We need to talk about that another time.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Johnny Rabbit, KMOX.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. amazon.com/prime.